What up, guys? Welcome to Archive TV. I'm Shane.
I'm Fletch.
We are back for another strain review. What are we looking at today?
It's Rainbow Belts number 20, the 1.0, which was the Mumbo 75 crossed with back cross to Skittles, essentially. So it's a Skittles BX1, but it's a feminized back cross, essentially. And that's the clone that I selected amongst other ones and gave out to the world. You know, I sent it to, like, I don't know, 50 or 100 people. In 2020. So, I mean, I made the strain in like 2016 and people didn't really, I don't know. Seed market's weird. It's a bunch of people that just look for other people's results instead of looking at what they're buying and who they're buying it from. They're like, oh, so-and-so bought these and says they're good, so I'll buy them. But it's not really a good frame of reference because some people don't really know what is good and is what is really good and what's just acceptable. And so, the strain didn't really pop. And I was like, well, I'll put out a clone of it and kind of get the whole market started because everybody wants something that's already proven and selected. So I sent it out to a bunch of people and it became really popular. And that's kind of what drove the whole Rainbow Belts hype of the last 3 or 4 years, I'd say.
It's interesting, though, that it didn't hit right away, you know?
Yeah, it was great weed. It's just one of those things. It's like, nobody wants to be the first person through the door in this business for some reason.
Especially now, like, so more than ever, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and what's funny to me is like the first person through the door rarely ends up with an arrow in their back. It's like, think of all the guys that have released not even great strains, right? But just great, like a clone that gets widely spread. those varieties build their entire business for them. You know, I think Tropicana Cookies is probably a great example of that. Not really my favorite weed at all. It's not that impressive because it's just like a purple tangy, you know, you remember when tangy came out? You remember Crockett had that purple tangy that was low in THC, just like Tropicana, but it was dark purple like that and had an orange smell and flavor. And to me, Tropicana is like a slightly more potent version of Crockett's purple tangy cut.
But like just slightly more potent in the sense of being potent at all. You know what I mean? So it's
exactly.
Not potent enough to be it's not potent smoke. And it's not the best of those orange terps if that's what you're after anyway.
Agreed. It's not that tangy.
Yeah. I'm like, what's the craze here? I don't understand.
You know? Right. But that was kind of one of those varieties that has become a huge name, built the brand name of Oni, and they've since made stuff in Harry Palms, and those guys have since made better stuff that the market does really, but the consumer likes the Tropicana Cookies because it's dark purple, and forget what I was saying about that.
I guess it is a flavor profile that you're not typically that flavor profile you're going to see more light green bud, you know, more so than a dark purple. So I guess for that novelty aspect makes it sort of interesting. But again, not something that I would see and be like, oh, this is the one. This is a keeper. This is something that I can kind of build my whole brand around, which is kind of crazy that that's been the case, you know?
Yeah, and that's not to say that I think it's bad weed necessarily. It just doesn't do anything for me personally.
Yeah.
Just like food, everybody has their own preference. But my point is that the plant isn't particularly potent. It's not necessarily a better or new flavor compared to anything else. It was just kind of a purple tangy remake.
But people really liked it.
And you built and they were able to build a big name around it. So it's one of those things that, like, I think that there's a lot of strains that get looked over because someone doesn't select a clone from it and essentially sell the clone. It's like there's so many growers that are just looking for the clone everybody else says they want to buy. And then they're like, okay, I'm going to make that my business now. Like Runtz was a perfect example. You know, nobody was growing Runtz. And then as soon as people were like, these dudes are getting $5,000 a pound for this Runtz shit. Now everybody wants Runtz. And now there's entire businesses that are built around growing Runtz or a cross of Runtz or whatever it is that have nothing to do with the original Runtz guys. You know, it's like everybody, there's only one person that walked through the Runtz door initially, but there's hundreds or thousands of people that are walking through it since.
And have been able to benefit off of
it. Yeah, and the point I'm making is that a good clone of it getting out there is what spurs that growth, right? I'm not saying it's good or bad or people are shitty because they're growing something that's good. No, my point is just that someone has to pop a seed, find something that's unique, and then put it into the market for the market to start paying attention, you know?
And you put it out there in clone form, people can get their hands on it and start doing stuff with it a lot faster. It's like you kind of pass the baton to them, you're halfway there, then, you know, within a year, you can already start seeing a lot of results coming back, a lot of different shit people have done with it.
Exactly.
In a short period of time.
So we haven't really talked about the rainbow belts at all, but just kind of how it started going was, you know, I put the clone out and that really developed the whole thing. And then I made the 2.0 line that was this clone crossed with the Moonbow 112 F2 Mini.
Which we have a review of that one online. You guys can go check that one out.
Yep. And, you know, you can kind of tell the traits that come through from the parent. And to me, this thing is like, I think it's a great example, like a Skittle dominant Do-Si-Do Skittles hybrid. It's gassier, it's stankier, but it's got that nice potpourri Skittle fruitiness to it that sticks on your palate.
I feel like this one didn't take a ton from the Skittles other than just that flavor, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is obviously all you want when you're breeding with Skittles, you know?
Pretty much.
But this one has like a really nice structure and body to it for for any Skittles.
Yeah, and like with a good grower, this thing produces pretty damn good. It's fruity. It's won countless like hash awards. People love the hash off this thing. Like as soon as I put this clone out and a handful of like good growers started growing it and making seeds with it, like making hash with it, like Al Organics and a handful of NorCal guys. And then there were some guys in Michigan, like Fort Wendy. I think he won an award with it as well. And if not, maybe it was just that he hit me up and told me, dude, I'm killing it with this thing, you know, a couple few years ago before. The problem with giving your clone out and making it blow out up that big is that everyone starts growing it, and then the market for it kind of dies off sooner than later. And that's the same for any big brand name clone that really gets out there and gets put into the clone selling market.
Just because then the flower market becomes saturated at some point.
And exactly.
It has a wave depending on how good it is. I guess that determines how long the wave's going to be, but it seems like the longest anything goes as far as being like the it hype strain. It's about a year, 2 year shelf life maybe.
Yeah, and scarcity can extend that time period. And then also a variety being scarce in supply because it's hard to grow. You know, so like Skittles is still scarce in supply because people just don't want to grow it. And so it's just a matter of balancing all that stuff in the marketplace and providing people with plants that they can actually grow. And depending on how good that clone is, it'll continue to have a pretty strong marketplace, which the Rainbow Belt still does. Plenty of people are growing and winning and selling Rainbow Belts, seeds, hybrids. Winning hash competitions with Rainbow Belts is like all the time. In fact, even like my buddies at Connected have Rainbow Belts.
Oh,
crossed.
Shit. That's right. Check this out. I'm going to show you this.
Brought it up here for me.
So Connected's doing this shit now, right? So I think this is something new. Rainbow Belts number 2, I'm assuming that's a selection that they made, or it's not the 2.0, but this is Biscotti crossed with Rainbow Belts, and it's this, I don't know what the name of this line is they're doing, but you see it has that QR code on the top. Mm-hmm. If you scan the QR code, it takes you to a website where it's like, hey, give us your feedback on this new project that we're working on.
Yeah.
Which I thought was pretty cool, you know? In fact, why don't we...
I mean, it smells good. I like it. It's like a Rainbow Belts-y gelato to me. Or, you know, or it's got that biscotti... you know, better dank smell than gelato, but it's fruitier than any gelato.
It's pretty straight down the middle, I thought.
Yeah, it's got traits from both that are really nice.
And there was a few nugs too in here that were a little bit tighter. And that one's pretty nice.
Definitely more Cali type bud structure than I usually select for.
Yeah.
You know, and not good or bad at all. It's just that more dense, calyxed out purple. Bud structure.
Yeah,
I tend to stick
rockier.
With like a little bit tighter calyx formation with tight resin on it. I don't really care about big blown out purple calyxes, which is great for like packaging and transfer a product because it still stays looking good. It doesn't get beat up as easily. You know, that purple kind of provides a nice black backdrop for the resin to stand out off of. When you have that more flat surface instead of the blown out surface, it tends to get rolled in the bag more and end up with that more cone shaped bud that doesn't look as exciting.
Doesn't look as resin dense as it actually is, though.
Exactly. You
know, that's even the kind of bud you break open to and you're like, oh wow, this is gorgeous before it got beat up.
Yeah, and that stuff, in my experience at least, the stuff that's more blown out and purple and stuff tends to test lower in general. Yeah. Not always, but just there, you know, it's more exposed. And yeah, I mean, that's just been my experience. Doesn't mean that it's less potent from a how you smoke it feeling perspective. I'm just talking about getting tests done at the lab. The more purple stuff tends to test a little bit lower.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what you think of the smoke on that one. For me, it was, I didn't get to like the rainbow belts, like you said, with the smell. It was pretty 50-50 down the middle. I didn't get a ton of that, like, sweet, you know, super.
No,
super
I don't get much
belts.
Similar flavor.
Maybe because
these.
I'm smoking this right now, and this is what's fresh on my mind and my palate.
This is more biscotti-ish.
Yeah. But here's what it says on the website right here. If you scan that QR code.
But it smells rainbow belts.
Thanks for trying out our new drop, Biscotti times Rainbow Belts number 2. We're committed to constantly improving and pushing quality further, and we need your help to do it. Your honest opinion helps in our mission to grow, breed, and sell the most premium flower imaginable.
I think it's great. I love what Connected and Alien Labs are doing with, like, you know, doing their pheno hunts, exposing the customers to the product and the process, and, you know, being able to collect the user's information or their opinion about your product. They're also collecting information too. You definitely never able to do any online shit without giving someone your email nowadays, right? But
if it's a cool brand that's doing cool things and clearly trying to educate the consumer.
That's right.
Like they're kind of in a very subtle way educating the consumer, like you said, about the process and about this is a work in progress.
That's right.
Not everything you're going to smoke all the time is going to be the finished product. You know, there's a lot of work that goes into breeding and somebody has to smoke that weed too.
Agreed. And you need it to resonate with your consumer. I mean, I think that's probably what I don't do as well, right? Is I'd pretty much select based on what resonates with me. And then if my crew also resonates with them, then it ends up in the market. If it doesn't, then like I've shown you hundreds of jars that don't even make it past me or strains because I'm just not that into it. Even whereas a bunch of our consumers may really be into it. It's just because I think it's common or not unique to me, I'm depriving my fans or consumers potentially of flavors that they would really enjoy. And Connected's the method that they're doing this and how they're doing it, they're giving themselves the opportunity to serve the customer with what the customer wants rather than just getting to try what the chef likes to cook.
Exactly. And it's like you said, like they might, who knows, they might get some of these that come back that surprise them. Like maybe within the crew, this is the one that really stood out of these new drops that we've been making. But man, when we look at the fucking survey results, everybody else is going in a totally different direction, you know?
Yeah.
Because when you have a more refined palate, like you said, the stuff that stands out to you is probably going to be different than the stuff that stands out to the guy who's really into smoking, but has only been smoking for 4 or 5 years. You
think about like caviar or something. You know, if you've got really expensive eating habits, things like caviar may be what you need to get excited. I know people that are like that. You know, they'll put caviar in almost anything just because it's expensive, and that makes it rare in their life, relatively speaking, even if they can afford it all the time.
Truffle.
And it's like, you know, if you don't really have expensive taste, like, I don't really like caviar myself. It's not, you know, it's okay, but I'm not spending $300 on a little tin of it. But I understand why someone would. At the end of the day, that's just not really a product for me because I'm not really that heady of a food consumer, relatively speaking, in that sense of the terms. I mean, I like organic food and shit from the farm. But the point is just that, like, not everybody's palate is that damaged. You know, I have a damaged palate because I've just seen so many different varieties and variations of hybrids and original strains and everything that I know exactly what I like. And then everything outside of that small scope is average to me, regardless of other people, what other people, that may, a lot of that stuff may not be average to the vast majority of consumers.
I wonder if it changes too, like how we've talked about how with food, your taste buds kind of change later on in life. You can, things are, aren't, don't seem as pronounced, you know, you start eating spicier food, whatever. I wonder, like, with, you're probably at the stage right now where, like, the more you've smoked, like you said, you've tried so many different things that you can detect things, and you smell something, you taste something, it reminds you of something else. Almost, it's very rare you try something that isn't reminiscent of something you've tried before, you know. But you're probably at the point now where you've tried so many different things that your palate has become more refined. But now we're getting to the age where you're going to start losing a little bit of that because of, like we said, it's probably the same thing with taste. I don't know if it's just your taste buds change or what it is, but you're not able to taste things as well.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's going to happen with weed as well, or if that sticks around a little bit longer than the
food, or you grow out of flavors, right? Yeah. It's like, you know, I used to really like cheese when I first got the clone, like we talked about before, because it was like this really earthy, danky, kind of grapey tasting sweet, and it was like had a really good taste. It wasn't cheesy at all, I didn't think. The Hawaiian lemons, I think, is way more cheesy than cheese is. But man, the first like couple ounces of that stuff I smoked, I was like pretty into it. I was like, man, this cheese is awesome. I want to grow this all the time. And then like after I got a couple ounces in, I was just like, I don't like this anymore.
Yeah.
This is, it just, it's pukey. It's not as sweet anymore. Just now, and it's not just me. Like everybody, this was probably 2007 or around then that the clone finally made it to like Northern California. Maybe it was a little earlier, maybe 05, 06 at the earliest. And everyone had that same experience. The first cheese joints you smoked, you're like, dude, this shit's the bomb. This is,
it was that
like old
dirty gym sock funk. Yeah. Okay, yeah, that's.
But that, but it also had this like sweetness to it that was kind of grapey, I thought, and everyone grew it for like that next year, right? And all those pounds sold like crazy. And the next year, everybody grew it again.
Nobody wanted it.
And nobody wanted to touch it, right? Because everyone had gotten burnt out of, like, by the time all that weed got sold over the next year, everybody was like, no, anything but cheese. Shit, bring train wreck back, but don't bring fucking the cheese. And it, so it's one of those strains where it's, if you buy an eighth at a shop and it's really well grown, you may think it's your favorite strain, but go grow a bunch of it, trim it and smoke only that for a month and let me know what you think of the cheese after that. And so I think you can grow to hate things as well.
Yeah.
You can grow to love things, and some things you can probably grow to hate them.
I'm trying to think of strains that I don't know if I have any like that. Shit that I used to love that I like. There's obviously shit that the first time you smoke it, you're like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then you quickly realize like, oh, this isn't an everyday type of smoke for me. But I don't think there's anything, at least yet, that I used to love that I now just want nothing to do with, you know? I think also, too, like most of the shit that I used to love smoking, when we talk about a lot of these old strains, a lot of it's like, I haven't seen it in a while now.
Yeah.
So I'd probably be excited to see it again. And then if it came, if it somehow had a second resurgent wave of popularity and became popular, I'd probably get over it quicker than I did the first time.
Papaya is a perfect example of that for me. That papaya is like the most average plant I would get, average meaning the most common, that was like the average of plants I would get from Dutch seeds when I first started growing. So like year 2001 to 2005, Dutch hybrid, like whether it was Sirius seeds, Sensi, even Breeder Steve stuff, a lot of that had that type of smell too. It's just this, like this skunk number one with a fruit smell added to it is how I describe it. It's like I can smell skunk number one in this hybrid. And pretty much everything in Amsterdam was a skunk one hybrid. So it all had this common smell and flavor to me, which is basically what papaya is. And as soon as that clone came back around and started becoming popular, I was like, I don't get this. This is like, as herb, I think it's some of the worst herb to smoke.
The issue with that one, I think why it had that second wave of popularity was because that was right when sugar started popping, diamonds.
Well, the thing that about those strains is the reason they kind of suck to smoke is they're kind of have a lot of plant material to them. They yield good. That's why people like them. And they just taste smoky. Like, they may have that really nice fruity smell, but they taste smoky. So now that hash has become really popular, you get rid of all the plant material, and it's actually really nice, tasty, enjoyable hash. Yeah. And so I understand why it became popular. It's easy to grow. It yields heavily.
Doesn't get me high, though.
Yeah, I mean, I never enjoy it. It was flat to me as well, yeah. But I see why people like it.
Yeah, I do. For a while when I was out in Colorado, the first time I had seen it come back, 710, that was like their staple out there when they started out in Colorado. So when I first tried their shit, a lot of their, especially concentrates, it was papaya this, papaya that. So that was for me. I had maybe tried what was called papaya a couple times, maybe in like the early 2010s, but it wasn't something that was ever really around heavily where I was. Mm-hmm. So it felt newer to me when I tried it, like in the 2015 to 18, when it started popping up again. But I did like smoking that one just for the flavor for concentrates.
The hash is a totally different experience than the flower.
It's one of those other ones, though, too. Like, if I'm coming home and I need to get high and then leave the house real quick, like, I'm either not going to smoke that one or I'm going to take a hit of that one and then follow it up by something that's actually going to do the job. You know what I mean?
Yep. No, they were always great hash strains, all those. Because basically, like, Skunk Number One and the seeds that proliferated in Amsterdam were all seeds from Sam the Skunk Man, pretty much. He's the one that bred Skunk Number One, or at least he's the one that took it to Europe and did all the work, right? And his work at Hortifarm BV, which was a cannabis research business that him and Robert Connell Clark started in the Netherlands, they got a permit for it. And then that technology that they did through their breeding work was then sold on to GW Pharmaceuticals, which is the company that sells Marinol and all the like pharmaceutically pharmacy available THC products. And he's talked about it many times that he, throughout the 80s and doing that work, his goal was to produce a pure THC trichome head, essentially, like a high yielding dry sift trichome head. And then he preferred the more sativa, sweeter smell as well. So all of his selections were stuff that yielded tons of keefy, dry, full melt, dry sift, which is great for hash, and had the sweet fruity smell that he liked of the Skunk line. And essentially that became the parent lines for almost everything in Amsterdam. Yeah. So anytime you'd get Skunk One crossed with nearly anything else, they almost all just smelt like Skunk Number One because he'd created such a strong breeding inbred line that has traits of high resin content, high potency, high THC, and that kind of like musty sweet smell. It's like musty herb and some sort of fruit, papaya, pineapple, like C99 pineapple. Yeah. Right, that's just another family of them.
Don't see that one around much anymore either.
No, but anything that has that's like that family of smells, that's I just associate with Skunk Number One. And they make great hash strains. And that's apparent why people are growing papaya and Skunk Number One hybrids again, because the hash market, or the water hash market in particular. Because if BHO were still huge, strains like papaya wouldn't really matter that much because lots of varieties yield well when you make BHO. But out of all those strains that'll yield really well in BHO, only a small portion of them will wash well. Yeah. As also. So the rosin market has kind of taken your available hash flavor profiles and limited them significantly to a very small family of plants that have a trichome head that will freeze in 32 degree water and be able to extract and not burst in the process.
So what's the solution there? I mean, we're not going to bring BHO back, you know? Although I'm surprised.
I'm not necessarily against the idea of it. I think that my biggest problem with BHO always was the mystery oil that you seemingly can never get out of it completely. I'm sure you've purged tanks before. How many times have you purged a tank over and over and over, Shane?
Plenty of times. And
like a brand new tank, you get it, and you do a dry run, and you get oil in the bottom of the collection vessel.
Every time.
Every single time, even if you clean a tank four times, brand new. That's my understanding. I don't know what that is or why.
And I always felt weird too once everybody moved over to like solely closed loops, and I would go into some of these facilities and see these machines that they had just been running insane amounts of shit through, you know what I'm saying? And anytime we would run dry runs through our machines, even though they hadn't only been used a year or two, I mean, there was a lot of shit in there, you know what
yeah.
I mean?
If there's any engineers out there, here's my proposition of how we can somewhat solve this problem. Now, I haven't spent enough time really looking into how to do it, but the basic concept is this. If you can get your wash water cold enough, there will be more strains that will be able to wash, because essentially the trichome head's like vodka. It reduces the freezing point of water, thins out the trichome head. So you have THC, which is like hard at 70 degrees, but if I add lots of terpenes, or just have some terpenes but very low THC, it's not going to freeze. And then that's a greasy strain. And then vice versa. High THC, low terpene content, or just a lot of THC and a lot of terps and the right combination of terpenes with not a super low freezing point. And so basically, the stuff that washes well is stuff that where the trichome head will still be solid at 32 degrees, because that's about as cold as you can really get the water. So you can add salt to it, and you'll be able to reduce the temperature of your washing solution. And then you can wash the salt off, theoretically.
By about how much?
I think you need a lot. I mean, I think I remember looking it up, and it's like 5 pounds of salt in a 5-gallon bucket to reduce it to like 22 degrees. But you could have like a glycol solution, like antifreeze, right? Whether that's safe or not, or whether you can wash it off, I don't know. Someone can do the science. I mean, honestly, I wouldn't really have a problem with someone washing in a glycol bath that's negative 10. And now you can wash OG, and it comes out like chronic. And when you scoop it out of the glycol solution, it gets washed in fresh RO water. And if that RO water is able to wash it off so well that there's no traceable amount of the glycol solution, I don't see anything wrong. Like, it's all washed off.
That seems possible.
It's not going to absorb the trichome heads aren't going to absorb it, and we would know that from our assay off afterwards. So you take your hash sample after you're done with it, after you washed it and everything and dried it, and go get it tested. Does it have polyethylene glycol in it or not? Which polyethylene glycol is really not that dangerous. I mean, what were all the vape pens being cut with? PEG, same shit, polyethylene glycol. So I don't think it's necessarily the most dangerous thing to try out by any means. And it's testable. I want my royalties.
Because that would open up the door to be able to make great melt with a bunch of varieties that we've always wished made better melt, because the flavor profiles are so enjoyable,
too.
You know?
Make them yield better, too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That'll be interesting to see if anybody takes that and runs with it.
Yeah, it would be cool. Like I said, I've been thinking about it for years. There's only so many things to do, and washing is not high on my priority list in terms of things I want to spend a lot of time doing.
Yeah.
I've had enough back-breaking years of doing that. Granted, the equipment available is a lot better today than it's ever been.
Sure is. Tell you what, man, I'm pretty fucking stoned right now.
Yeah, Belts 20 is pretty good. There's a reason people pass it around a lot.
I'm higher than I should be off anything Skittles related. I'll say that right now. That's all you need to know about this one, guys.
A little bit geeked.
A little bit. A little hungry, too. I think it's munchy time.
Yep.
Thank you guys for joining us. We'll be back for another one of these soon. Press all the buttons down there. Like, subscribe, do all the stuff. Peace.